I am Jim Rome. We are joined right now by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. He is a Celtics analyst for NBC Sports Boston. He is also co-host of the Crossover Podcast. He is Chris Mannix. Chris, I know you are busy as hell, so I appreciate you doing this hit. How you doing, dude? What's up?
What's going on, Jim?
Lots to talk about, so let me jump right at it. Great to have you. So the Knicks, Chris, up their series lead to 2-0 over the Pacers last night. They did so in overcoming some adversity in the process. They lost OG Anunoby to a hamstring injury. Jalen Brunson was limited after tweaking his foot in the first quarter. How much, Chris, of a missed opportunity was that for Indy to rip the home court, given how busted up the Knicks are and were?
Yeah, I think it was a big missed opportunity. Look, double-digit leads in today's NBA don't mean a heck of a lot, especially the number of three-point shots that are tossed up every game. But to lead by 10 coming out of the locker room at halftime and then go into the fourth quarter down 8 points, I mean, that was the ball game really right there. And look, strategically, you know, I think Rick Carlisle is going to look back at the second half of this game and wonder why he pulled T.J. McConnell from it. I mean, I thought T.J. McConnell was doing a credible job defending Jalen Brunson, who got his rhythm going in that second half. But McConnell was pesky. He was physical. He was making Brunson work. And then, you know, 5-6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, McConnell's just gone. And you know, I thought that was a strategic mistake by a coach that's a really very good one in today's NBA. So for those reasons, you know, plus Tyrese Halliburton played great. I mean, he had 6 points in game one and, you know, 30 plus in game two. I mean, there's just so many reasons the Pacers should have come out of this game with a win. And now they go back home, you know, down 2-0.
Agreed. Chris Mannix joining us. So let me jump to the Celtics because you know them as well as anybody. While they did hammer Cleveland in game one, much of the talk, of course, surrounded the play of Jason Tatum, who struggled again going 0-for-5 beyond the arc. He finished with 18 points. I mean, what do you think about the current state of his game? Is this much ado about nothing, or is there a legitimate cause for concern?
Well, look, the numbers for Jason Tatum in clutch time minutes this season are not great. I think he's shooting something like 36% from the floor, 33% from three-point range. So the numbers, look, they don't lie in these particular situations. I think part of the problem is the Celtics haven't been in many of those type of situations during the year. Look, they had the largest margin of victory in the NBA. It was near historic levels. And, you know, when you're blowing teams out, you don't need to be clutch in late game moments. But look, if you follow the Celtics, and I've watched every one of their games, but not a lot of their games, you know, those end of game situations can get a little bit dicey. Sometimes they look great when the ball's flowing through Tatum in the low post, or they're moving it around and everybody's getting shots. But sometimes it stagnates, and you know, they kind of rely on too much isolation ball at the end of these games. So if you are looking to kind of poke holes in the Celtics right now, it, you know, getting a bucket at the end of a game, Tatum's ability to be the kind of closer that we've seen Anthony Edwards be this postseason, that we've seen Steph Curry be in years past, that's certainly one potential vulnerability that they have.
Talking to Chris Mannix. Chris, the Joker won his third MVP award. Last night on TNT's program, Shaq congratulated him on that award and then told him to his face that he thought that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander should have won the award, not Jokic. I mean, you have a vote, right? Who were your top three?
I voted for Shai as my number one. I said to myself down the stretch, because I thought Shai and Jokic were really close, that if Oklahoma City wound up in the number one seed, I was going to vote for Shai. And look, they did it by what, tiebreaker, basically. Like, it was even up in the standings between Denver and Oklahoma City, but they finished number one. I think being the unquestioned leader of the number one team in the toughest conference in basketball, especially with the kind of roster he had around him being so young and where the Thunder were last year, which is out of the playoffs, I think that warranted Shai getting my vote. Also, I think Shai was, or is, a better two-way player than Jokic and Luka Doncic, who was third on my MVP ballot. So I voted for Shai. I don't begrudge people that voted for Jokic. There's plenty of reasons to go and do that. But look, I value defense, you know, maybe more than others did when it came to the MVP vote. And again, like, I think winning matters. And yes, Denver won at almost the exact same level of Oklahoma City, but the Thunder are the number one seed. And, you know, that kind of swung a little bit towards Shea's way on my ballot.
Chris Mannix joining us. Chris, I'm still a big boxing guy, so I want to take advantage of having you on the program right now. I'm going to hit you with a nice, short question. Here it is. Ryan Garcia, reaction. I mean, dude, the hell do we do with this dude? What are we supposed to do with this guy? Where do you even start?
I think, for starters, you've got to see the process play out here. I mean, Ryan Garcia tested positive for a banned substance. Ostarine is not a substance that, to my knowledge, you can get in your system unless you are acquiring it illegally. It's not, to my knowledge, in supplements that are out there purchasable, you know, over the counter or through whatever GNC kind of thing. So the big thing for Ryan Garcia, and I've talked to people around him in the last couple of weeks extensively, the big thing for him is over the next weeks and months to find a plausible explanation for all this. Look, Canelo Alvarez back in 2018 tested positive for clenbuterol, and he was able to kind of skate on that in the public eye because clenbuterol is something that is found in meat in Mexico. So there were other athletes that tested positive for that. So people said, all right, well, that's at least plausible. You got a situation with Conor Benn over in the UK blaming contaminated eggs for his positive test for clomiphene. A lot of people don't believe it, but it at the very least is a plausible explanation. Ryan Garcia has to come up with a plausible explanation. Just blaming Victor Conti isn't going to do it. Nobody in media has been more critical of Victor Conti than I have in the boxing space. I don't think Victor Conti or Memo Heredia or any of these former PED dealers or people involved with banned substances should be involved in the sport. But saying Victor Conti rigged the test just doesn't fly. That's not going to work for Ryan Garcia. So he has to come up, Jim, with a plausible explanation, or else he's going to be, I think, in a world of trouble.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, so one more thing. You come to find out that Jake Paul and Mike Tyson is not going to be deemed an exhibition, but rather like an actually sanctioned fight. Like, where do you come out on this? I mean, what is it, Chris? Is it a fight? Is it just content? Are you interested? Are you going? How are you going to treat it?
I mean, I'm interested. I'll be in New York on Monday at the first press conference for this, and I'm anxious to see kind of how it all plays out. I don't love the fact that it's a sanctioned bout. That, to me, is a little goofy. Mike Tyson's going to be 58 years old when he steps into the ring. There's going to be, I think, no greater age gap ever than there will be between Tyson and Jake Paul, in a professional fight, a sanctioned fight, when those two guys face off. There's really no need for it to go on Mike Tyson's record. But look, I think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be this all-action brawl. For starters, they're wearing 14-ounce gloves, which, for context, those are basically sparring gloves. Those aren't the type of gloves you wear in a traditional fight. They're bigger, more padding, not the kind of gloves you'd wear if you were a big-time puncher in the heavyweight division. So I think it's going to be, you know, less thrilling than maybe some people are anticipating, but I think it will have some moments. I think early on, Tyson's probably going to go for it, try to land a big shot on the jaw of Jake Paul. My concern is, what happens in the third round and the fourth round, when we remember that Mike Tyson is 58 years old going up against a guy 30 years his junior? So I think it's interesting to a degree, but I would temper expectations for people that think they're going to see a revival of the old Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, like, I love Mike, but what I don't love is this possibility or notion of a 58-year-old man getting beaten down or beaten up. I mean, do you think Jake Paul would go in and actually try and do something like that?
No, look, because at his core, Jake Paul's an entertainer, right? Like, look, if Mike comes to try to take his head off, I don't think Jake's going to hold back on a counterpunch or try to land one big shot. But I don't think Jake Paul... Look, a comparison can be made to what happened with Evander Holyfield and Vitor Belfort. Remember that from a few years ago? Like, Vitor Belfort went out there to kill Evander Holyfield. Like, he was trying to hurt him, and ultimately he did, and could have done worse if that fight wasn't stopped. I don't believe Jake Paul's going to have the same mindset. Jake Paul wants to put on a show. Jake Paul wants to put, you know, butts in the seats and drive, you know, people to Netflix to watch this fight. But he's not going to go out there and try to decapitate Mike Tyson. There's no real upside for him in doing that. So I think Jake Paul's going to have a plan. I think he's going to make a show of it, but I don't think he's going to go out there and try to wipe the mat with Mike Tyson in the first round.
I agree. I don't think so either. He is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, a Celtics analyst for NBC Sports Boston, co-host of the Crossover Podcast, and we covered a lot of ground. Chris, I really appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Anytime, Jim.
Great talking to you, Chris Mannix. All right, so we got some boxing in there, too.